Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Kerwin and Gary Spain. On this week's show, we're looking at the Republic of Ireland's qualifying campaign for the 2002 World Cup in Korea, Japan, with some memorable results, a trip to Iran, and perhaps the sowing of the seed that was to erupt before the 2002 World Cup was to begin. Don't forget to share the show on your own social media channels to let more people find out about the history and heritage of Irish football. And why not share your own stories about your travels and your footballing stories while you're at it as well. Turn on your notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so that you get notified straight away when a new episode drops. Now, the 2002 World Cup qualifying campaign was memorable for so many reasons. Mick McCarthy was trying to hold on to his job with big question marks on his ability to get us over the line and to a major tournament. And what's more, we had been drawn in a very difficult group with two world-class teams. So I suppose the last time we left off with the Irish national team, Gary, it was another agonizing playoff defeat against Turkey. This time around, we're trying to go to the 2002 World Cup in Korea, Japan. I suppose, where are we with Mick McCarthy's reign at this stage? It's not like we've been terrible. We've missed out by a hair's breadth twice on going to major championships under Mick. So where's the feeling about where Mick and this team kind of is?
I think the fair thing is that Mick was under massive pressure. His job was certainly in question. It is. I mean, as you say, we missed out twice in playoffs. But at that stage, we had just come off the back of the Jack Charlton era. So we weren't expecting to be missing out in playoffs. And the feeling was we had a very good squad. We should have done better. Obviously, we talked about the disastrous end to Euro 2000 qualification. So Mick was under a lot of pressure. Probably there was a feeling the national team wasn't in such a good place. And this was certainly felt it was going to be his last campaign unless we qualified, unless we did well. And it obviously was a disastrous draw.
Yeah, and even missing out by, you know, those, like a hair's breadth. I mean, if you go into a playoffs and you get smashed 4 or 5 across two legs, you kind of go, okay, we're not good enough, we're not there. But I mean, fractions away, inches away, did that still not make a difference? There was still serious pressure on him.
I know. I mean, look, we can go back. That Macedonia game was pretty much a disaster. Okay, I know it was the 92nd, 93rd minute, but it was that was a real kick in the teeth. And I know we only lost to the Turks on away goals, but it wasn't. I suppose in some ways we were well beaten. I can talk about other playoffs ones that got away.
Had we become too used to major playoffs, and so the baseline was get to major playoffs. And when that didn't happen, there was huge pressure on him.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, the expectation was to get to the tournament. I think that's at least. And even though we got to two playoffs and lost two playoffs, and they were both very close. I mean, we were a goal away from putting the Belgians out. Mm. We were a goal away from putting the Turks out. But ultimately, we didn't do it. And that's why Mick was under intense pressure going into this campaign. We'll go on and talk about the way it panned out and what turned out afterwards. But I think it's fair to say that going into the campaign, he was under pressure and he could well have got the sack had it not started well. Mm. I think that's probably fair to say as well.
Yeah, and I suppose as well in this kind of time as well, are we seeing any new faces kind of break into the squad that would become, I suppose, a consistent feature?
Yeah, so there was a couple of key players coming through. I mean, well, technically Matt Holland played. He came off the bench against in Skopje against Macedonia. But I mean, this was Matt Holland coming into his own. Mm. And Steve Finnan came in as well. He obviously went on to win a Champions League and everything with Liverpool and be a fantastic fullback. And obviously with my Limerick bias, he's one of our own. But he was one of the key players that was coming through as well. So a lot of the same players, your Robbie Keane's, your Damien Duff's that had kind of come through previously. Obviously, you had Roy Keane there, who obviously went on to become a huge story. But Shea Given was the taken over now. He was the goalkeeper. He was going to be the number one. Obviously, he'd been around for a few years at this stage. He was definitely taking over at this point. Maybe looking back with hindsight and even looking back at everything that went on. But the feeling was, it was going to be really, really difficult to make the World Cup. And certainly the feeling was Mick was a man under pressure.
The feeling of him being under pressure probably got heightened by the group that we got drawn in. So maybe give us a little bit of insight into who was in our group for this World Cup qualifier, Group 2.
Well, there was one automatic place and the runner-up were going into the playoffs. And we were very unlucky with the seeding in that we ended up top of the third pot. So we just missed out on being second seeds. And frankly, it probably couldn't have been much worse. I mean, the Dutch, coming off Euro 2000, were a top team. They were the second seeds, and the Dutch were the top seeds, and Portugal were one of the strongest second seeds. I mean, they had a very impressive Euro 2000 as well. It come from behind, beating England 3-2, among other results. So it was a really tough group. It probably looked like an impossible group. Mm-hmm. And I know from talking to other fans, and I remember at the time, it was kind of, it was a disastrous draw. Mm. It was really thinking, are we out before it even began? It couldn't have gone any worse. I mean, the other teams in the group, the Estonia, Cyprus, and Andorra, they were all probably at that stage seen as cannon fodder, in that we were better at the time and we were perceived as being better than the three of them, and we would have been expected or demanding to take full points from those games. But it was going to be very, very difficult to get points from either Portugal or the Netherlands, and they would have been strong favourites to be going to either top the group or certainly one of them, the other one, to get the playoffs. So at the start of qualifying, I certainly didn't feel too confident. I didn't think I'd be booking flights to Korea or Japan. It was pretty much seen as being a really, really tough group. It was a really rotten look for Mick to get a group like that. Unlucky not to be in the top two for seeding, probably get the worst possible group that he could have got as a third seed.
It's kind of a bit of a seesaw group as well, though, isn't it? We've got two really difficult teams in Portugal and Netherlands, and then we've got what you can say on the outside as three fairly easy teams. There's no kind of medium team in there that can really kind of put a spanner in the works for anybody. So it's a very kind of, one side is really incredibly difficult and the other side is really incredibly fairly easy, you can say. So it's a bit hard to kind of judge where, at the outset, I suppose, where those kind of points are going to come from. And almost certainly the path forward seems to be you absolutely have to get points somewhere with Portugal and Netherlands.
Yeah, I think the feeling was you absolutely had to get the 18 points from Estonia, Cyprus and Andorra. I think that was a given. And obviously it did turn out like that, but it did for everybody else. And then the feeling was, well, you need to either match or beat both of them, or match one of them and hope that the other one takes 6 points off the, you know, you'd kind of be hoping that Portugal beat the Netherlands twice or vice versa. And then maybe you could sneak a draw and maybe get two draws against one or the other.
Yeah, I think that that's it kind of made it obvious that you absolutely had to beat one of them. You had to beat Portugal or you had to beat Netherlands at some stage to give yourself at least a chance somewhere, yeah?
Yeah, I suppose. But we at that stage, we were very good at drawing with teams. We weren't too good at beating them. But the win would have been crucial, and so it proved, I suppose, as it turned out, although we only needed a draw. But yeah, but it was seen as being a really, really tough task. And
yeah, it didn't get any easier too, because the two teams that we had to play for the first two games are the Netherlands away and Portugal away as well. So it got doubly difficult from that point of view. But we did go to the Amsterdam Arena, and is it fair to say that's probably one of our finest results, one of our finest performances, even though we didn't get the win?
Yeah, so definitely one of the finest performances. And I think it sowed some seeds for future tribulations, let's say. So it was a fantastic performance. We went to Amsterdam. We were playing one of the top teams in the world. We took the lead in the first half, and we deservedly, we played really, really well. Yeah, we did. And 20 minutes into the second half, Jason McAteer made it 2-0. And at that stage, you're thinking, this is going to be one of the all-time great wins.
Dreamland.
Fantastic result. In dreamland. And I mean, but we were up against a high-quality, top-quality Dutch side. And they came back at us. And they got one back. And I mean, even when we were 2-1, you were dreading it. They got one back with 20 minutes to go. And you were dreading it. And when Giovanni van Bronckhorst equalized with 6 minutes to go, and you'd added time on top of that, you're thinking, God, we're going to lose this 3-2, and it's going to be even worse than having gone there and lost 3 or 4-0, you know, with all the hope, the expectation and everything. And let's not put too fine a point on it. We were delighted to hear the final whistle. Yeah. And to hang on for a draw. But with 20 minutes to go, it looked like being a famous win. And the reason, and this is where it kind of set the tone, because look, Roy Keane was magnificent that night. He played brilliantly. Mick McCarthy was punching the air at the final whistle, as indeed were most of us, let's be honest. Mm. We were delighted with the result, even though we'd led 2-0. And Roy Keane was disgusted because we'd thrown away a 2-goal lead. Mm. Now, I don't know if I can do justice and maybe put both points of view forward, but I mean, he was playing for a Man United team at that stage that had won a treble. They were by far the best team in England, if not the best team in Europe. Mm. Probably should have won more Champions Leagues in that era. And he was probably their best player, or certainly arguably their best player. And the standards that he was used to on a club scene were not there. I mean, we were not. And I mean, we were not one of the top teams in Europe. Roy probably believed we should be, but we weren't. And even though we'd lost a 2-goal lead, a 2-2 draw in Amsterdam, and we had played really well, we were well worth the draw, if not worth the win, which could have been part of his frustration as well. But you come off, and there was a bit of it, though, saying, well, it's an awful group. That's as good as we played. It's probably as bad as we caught the Dutch on a good day, on a good day for us. They were maybe a bit complacent. And did we blow it? You know, had we won the game, we could have got a draw in Dublin, and that might have been enough if Portugal could beat them twice.
Yeah, and to take the flip side then for Mick McCarthy, you're up against a really, really top Netherlands team. You've got out of jail a little bit in terms of you've come away with a point, which was, looking at the group table, absolutely essential to go somewhere away and hopefully to get a point. So, yeah, sometimes 2-0 can seem like almost like a defeat, because you were 2-0 up and then they draw back to 2-2. But he's probably sitting there going, Jesus, If you were to give me a point before this match, I would snap your hand off.
Yeah, I think anybody, if you did, I mean, even looking back 25 years, any Irish fan before the match would have bitten your hand off for a point. I think that's right. That's been realistic. It's before the game, it would have been a fantastic result. I suppose, given the fact you're 2-0 up, expectations change, things change. You're 2-0 up with 19 minutes to go. Should you have held on? Should you have defended it better? Should he have celebrated the way he did at the final whistle? But I mean, it was a huge point. And as I go back to my point, he was a man under pressure. Mm. He was a man whose job was in question going into that campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. And it certainly, I suppose, opened up the window to what was to follow a couple of years later over in Japan as well. So a difficult game. We come through with a point, but it's not over with the difficult games yet, because we have to go to Portugal then and play a really crack Portugal side as well, after just playing a brilliant Netherlands side as well in Lisbon. So how does Ireland approach this game then?
Well, it was going to be another really tough game. We did go into it with a lot more confidence. The other teams had picked up, being the Dutch were putting a few past Cyprus. The other results, Portugal had gone to Estonia and won. No real surprises. But look, we were going there again, hoping for a point to be a fantastic result. And that was the approach. It was expected to be incredibly difficult. You're going to the Stadium of Light in Lisbon. You're up against a crack Portuguese side, a team that had beaten us 3-0 in the same place 5 years earlier, and deservedly so. So we were going there with trepidation again.
Yeah, and is it a performance that's, you know, you look at the Netherlands game and we did take the lead, and, you know, we played really, really well for quite a period of that game. Is this, I suppose, the flip side of that, where we had to have backs to the walls and defending heavy for 90 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly my view, my recollection, my memory of the game. It was backs to the wall. I mean, we were high up behind the goal, from what I can remember, and all the play was at the other end for the first half. All the play. I don't remember us even getting out of our own half. Now, maybe you can go look back and watch videos back. But Portugal dominated the first half, and we survived till halftime, which was quite an achievement. And at halftime, you're thinking 0-0. Great performance. Richard Dunn was absolutely outstanding. Someone who had come, I suppose he's another player that had come through. He had the game of his life. He probably wouldn't have played except for injuries, but he was, for me, the star that night. We survived till halftime, went into the second half, and it was more of the same, and Conceição put them one up, and at that stage it looked like game over.
So where does our opportunity come from then for an equaliser? Because it sounds as if we're just basically defending in front of our own box pretty much for most of the game.
Yeah, well, that's my view of the game, my recollection of the game, what I felt at the time. And in reality, I mean, Matt Holland stuck one in from about 35 yards, and it was totally out of the blue. And it was, did that go in? And because it was up the far end of the pitch, and then suddenly we seen everyone celebrating. So, and I mean, I wasn't the only one that was slow to celebrate that one. The goal came out of the blue. And I mean, if I said we played really well the Dutch game, we deserved a point, possibly even deserved to win it. I mean, in Portugal, we were blessed to equalise, and even to just to hang on and get a point. It was an incredible result against a top quality side, but we definitely rode our luck, in my view, in Lisbon.
Yeah, 100%, and it wouldn't be the last time either that Matty Holland would score a stunner as well to get us to get us out of jail. But it sets us up kind of really nicely though for the group. We've gone away to the two very hardest teams in the group. We've gotten 2 points, 2 draws. And it must have been a real kind of momentum changer that all of a sudden we haven't got no points after going to those teams. We're in it. We've got something to fight for. And then we've got Estonia then at Lansdowne Road in October.
Yeah, so there's a couple of crucial things at that point. We'd got two fantastic results away. We had a number of games coming up that we'd have been expected to win, and it was crucial we just took full points. And the other crucial thing was the Dutch were playing the Portuguese twice before, I'm not going to say before we kick a ball again, but before we play either of them. And obviously, our job was to beat your Estonias, your Cypruses, your Andorras, and to watch what happens in the other two games. And we were hoping that one or the other of them would take 6 points, because if one of them could take 6 points, we'd only need a draw at home to the other one to qualify. yeah. not to get a playoff, at least a playoff. So it's not, so we had Estonia at home a few days. We came back from Portugal. It was the following Wednesday, I think. It was a comfortable enough 2-0 win. Mark Kinsella, Richard Dunn with the goals. All eyes were later on that night, I think it was a bit later, and Portugal went to Rotterdam and beat the Dutch 2-0. Two first half goals, a very impressive performance. Now, they'd been very impressive against us. And I think at that stage, you're looking and saying, well, we played really well against the Dutch. We deserved a point, could have beaten them. We've got an incredible draw in Lisbon, and now Portugal have gone to Rotterdam and beaten the Dutch. If they could just beat them at home, and we could draw with the Dutch in Dublin, we're, and just win all the other games. I know it's easier than it sounds, but we could actually get a playoff. And everything in the space of a month had actually changed the thinking. By October 2000, we were looking... well, a lot better.
Yeah. And I'd imagine that the pressure on the Dutch then would have been increased tenfold, because now they've started off the group with, you know, some I suppose what they would consider as poor results, and they're in a bit of a scrap early on to kind of separate themselves probably from what they would imagine as us, not necessarily Portugal, but Portugal go to Rotterdam and beat them 2-0, which turns into a massive result. So they're kind of under pressure as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they were under massive pressure. And even though I think I mentioned they beat Cyprus 4-0, they didn't break through until 20 minutes to go, you know. So the first goal took a while to come. So yeah, they were under certainly under massive pressure at that point in the campaign, and we were feeling an awful lot better about ourselves and our chances at that point as well.
Yeah, and we've got a good run. So we beat Estonia. We've got to go away to Cyprus as well. Fairly formulaic win against Cyprus.
Yeah, I mean, we played really well. Roy Keane had a fantastic game. He put us ahead after half an hour. Ian Hart made it 2. We had a little bit of a wobble for a while in the second half. We were 2-0 up, but a couple of late goals from Gary Kelly and Roy Keane. It was 4-0. It was a comfortable win, and it was very much job done. The Dutch were in Barcelona playing Andorra, and they scored 5, which that was expected to be a comfortable enough win. I mean, we were saying Estonia and Cyprus were kind of very beatable, but Andorra at that stage, and probably still are, would be very much seen as minnows, and everybody would have been expecting to take points off them.
Yeah. So attention turns to March 2001, then the end of March 2001, and another key round for us, not just because we were playing Andorra, but Portugal are playing the Netherlands now in Porto in Portugal as well. So for us, we're away at Andorra. 3-0 looks like it was a little bit harder than just a simple 3-0 win.
It was. So we'd gone from Cyprus to Andorra. We played, and I mean, the feeling was Cyprus was going to be the tougher game, but going to Andorra 4 days later was seen as being the formality, but it wasn't the formality it probably should have been. Ian Hart got a penalty in the first half, but it wasn't until 14 minutes to go that the game was finally put away when Kevin Kilbane got the second one. It said Matt Holland made it 3. It looks 3-0 sounds comfortable, but in Barcelona, in that small stadium with 5,000 Irish fans and no home fans, it was probably a little bit of an anticlimax, but it was job done. You know, it was job done. The job was done. Later on that night, Portugal were playing the Netherlands in Porto, as you say, and we were obviously hoping for a Portuguese win. And it was...
high drama by the looks of it.
Well, it went totally wrong. I mean, the Dutch went 1 up, they went 2 up, and it looked like being the worst possible result for us, which would have been the two of them splitting a win each. Portugal came back. Pauleta got one back 7 minutes from time, and Luis Figo with a very late penalty in added time earned a draw, which was certainly a better result for us than a Dutch win. But it also meant the Dutch had the same result as us away to Portugal. So we would need to get a result against Portugal to end the draw. So it now meant realistically we were looking at needing 2 draws in the home games to get a playoff. And if we wanted to win the group, we'd probably need a couple of wins. And that's obviously with beating all the minnows as well. Mm. And even a win over Portugal wouldn't be enough if we lost to the Dutch. So,
yeah, and a bit of role reversals as well. And the Dutch found out how it felt to be 2-0 up and pegged back to 2-2 as well. So the shoe was on the other foot, I suppose, for that one. But our next game is at home against Andorra. And I suppose at least for 2 or 3 minutes anyway, it was a bit of a panic mode.
Yeah, so this, I mean, okay, we struggled a little bit, but we beat them 3-0 away. But getting them back in Lansdowne Road, it was expected to be a formality, and we struggled. And I mean, after half an hour, they took the lead, and the Lima, he's very prominent still on social media. He played for Andorra for many years, scored the goal to put them ahead, and were just... Suddenly it was disaster mode. Surely not. This is impossible. And thankfully, we turned it around very quickly. Kevin Kilbane equalizer in a couple of minutes, and Mark Kinsler had us ahead. But it wasn't again until, 17 minutes from time. Mm. Gary Breen got a third to make the game safe. But it was a nervy performance. It was a scratchy performance. The Dutch battered the Cypriots later that night. But
is there any kind of criticism that comes from that? Because we played Andorra twice. We have beaten them, but they're a bit sticky in doing it. And then we've got to play Portugal next as our next home game for the next round of matches. So was there anybody kind of sitting there going, well, hold on a second here. You know, if we're struggling to beat Andorra, we got Portugal next, lads.
There was some nerves over it. And I mean, there was also the feeling the goal difference was starting to go against us as well. So that if we did lose to Portugal and just draw with the Dutch, we'd probably be missing out on goal difference. I can't remember how it stood, but we weren't, you know, we were, the Dutch were putting 5 past Andorra. We were getting 3. Okay, we'd both got 4 in Cyprus, but you didn't want a situation where you had to get a load of goals either. But yeah, we were probably looking forward to June with a little bit of trepidation because it was a tricky window. We'd Portugal at home, and then you had to go to Estonia a few days later and end the season. Players are tired, and it was 2 massive games that could shape the campaign.
Mm. So June, 2nd of June 2001, it's a packed Lansdowne Road for a huge, huge game, Ireland against Portugal. How does this game go for us? How do we play? Because we do take the lead.
Well, frankly, I thought we were awful.
tell us how you really feel, Gary.
people misremember and people claim Roy Keane played the Dutch on his own. He didn't, but he played the Portuguese on his own. We rode our luck in the first half. We were incredibly lucky to go in at halftime 0-0. We were a bit of a mess at the back, and we didn't play well. And I am excluding Roy Keane from this because he was simply magnificent, and he put us ahead midway through the second half, and frankly it would have been daylight robbery had we actually won the game. But Luis Figo grabbed an equalizer, but it was a great point and we were blessed to get it, but it wasn't a great performance. And probably the second time we played Portugal in the campaign, we drew 1-1. But I think even being biased, the Portuguese were the better team. And I don't think there's any other way to call that. Roy Keane, arguably his greatest ever game in a green shirt. And I think people do tend to misremember. You know, I'm not saying he had a bad game. He was brilliant against the Dutch as well. But in that game against Portugal, I thought he was out of this world, played some superb stuff and almost played them on his own, because the players around him didn't really step up. And it was a huge point. It set up the Dutch game. Maybe we're already looking forward to September, even though we had to go to Estonia and do a job. But it was a huge point, but a lot of relief to get a point. So even though we led for 13 minutes, 10 minutes probably, even though we led for about 10 minutes, it felt like definitely a point gained. And it did mean we only needed a draw against the Dutch once we did the business in the other games.
Yeah, we had to go to Tallinn then. So a big point against Portugal. That means we've now drawn with Portugal twice and drawn with the Dutch. So we're in a good place in terms of the top teams in the group. We have to go to what you can argue is a potential banana skin in Tallinn as well. Is this a nervy affair, or is it done and dusted before halftime?
No, I think it's done and dusted. We played well. We played well. It was done and dusted. We scored. Richard Dunn scored early. Matt Holland made it 2 before the break. And that was, it was comfortable enough. It was a comfortable enough win. It wasn't one I remember as being nervy. Portugal later on that night hammered the Cypriots, but I think we'd lost interest in Portugal at that stage. Maybe going back, I know, and you can look at it at the group table after later on and thinking we could win the group, but realistically, the way Portugal were scoring goals, we weren't expecting them to drop any points. And
well, I mean,
they were expected to win the group at this stage.
Yeah, so they beat Cyprus later that day after we beat Estonia. So they beat Cyprus 6-0. So you can probably argue that their goal difference is probably worth an extra point anyway at this stage, because they're racking up the goals as well, and would do so again in their next match against Andorra. Are we at this stage kind of looking at the Netherlands and not Portugal then?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as we finished the 2000-2001, let's say, English season, or, well, it was the same Irish season at the time, all eyes were on the Netherlands in September. A draw meant we were effectively guaranteed the playoff. We needed to take care of whatever we'd left. I think Cyprus at home was maybe the only one we'd left at that point. So a draw with the Dutch was all we needed to be guaranteed the playoff. Okay, if we beat the Dutch and made up the goal difference, we could top the group. If we beat the Dutch and the Portugal slipped up in Cyprus or something, or they weren't going to slip up against Andorra realistically, or even at home to Estonia. So possibly if they slipped up, we could win the group. But I don't think anyone was thinking win the group. I think people were thinking if we can draw with the Dutch, we're in a playoff, we're finishing second, and that would be incredible. And we'll take our chances in a playoff. We probably wouldn't come up against a team as good as the Dutch in the playoff. So it was all eyes on the 1st of September 2001. It was looking forward to it all summer. It was a huge game. There was also a massive U2 concert on in Slane. I know it caused agonizing. You would say these days you definitely talk about first world problems. But I know people that absolutely agonized over. I know people that chose the concert. I know people that chose the football. It was never a decision for me, but
maybe if Dana was playing, everybody would have just stopped playing at all, and it would have been no football.
we did it right in Limerick. You have to listen back to a previous podcast to get that story. But yeah, we did it right in Limerick, and we postponed the game for 24 hours. But unfortunately, FIFA aren't as accommodating, and or maybe you two weren't as big as Dana. There's your controversial take for the day.
But, quote of the podcast: Dana bigger than you two. Discuss. Okay. We roll into September for what is a huge, huge game. It's the game of the group. After all is said and done, and what is the feeling in the run up to this game? Because by far it is the biggest game of the year.
It's massive. And I mean, just to remind everyone, I mean, Lansdowne Road had gone all-seater at this stage. It was limited to 35,000. Every game was sold out. You know, you couldn't get a ticket for Estonia or Andorra. They were done on a block booking. So, but as you can imagine, demand for this game was just off the charts, particularly as the Dutch took their full allocation. They always travel in big numbers. Yeah. So I suppose whatever chance you had, Estonia, Andorra, Cyprus, you wouldn't expect them to take as many away tickets, certainly not in those days. But Dutch took their full allocation. Everybody wanted to be there. I presume everybody wanted to be at the U2 concert in Slane. I don't remember how difficult tickets were for that. I imagine, well, anytime trying to see U2, tickets are pretty much impossible. So they are a lot bigger than Dan. I was only joking. I doubt they're listening anyway.
No, you weren't.
But so look, I mean, maybe it was first world problems. Maybe people couldn't get a ticket for either as well. But it was a massive game. It was massive demand. Everybody wanted to be there. But having said that, I mean, the Dutch were probably still favourites, and we were thinking we rode our luck twice against Portugal. Did we miss our chance back in Amsterdam? Can we get a draw in Dublin? I mean, it was a tough task.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you just have to kind of look at it. So you talk about the Dutch team. This was the Dutch team that came to play us in Dublin that time. So you have Van der Sar, goalkeeper, Mario Melchiot, Jaap Stam, Kevin Hofland, Newman, Van Bommel, Zenden, Cocu, Van Nistelrooy, Patrick Kluivert, Mark Overmars. And then on the bench, you had people like Lanzat, McKay, Hasselbank, Van Hooijdonk, Van Bronckhorst. So this was absolutely a ridiculously stacked Dutch side with supreme talent, not just with fantastic talent across the pitch, but world-class talent across the pitch, wasn't it?
World-class on the bench. I mean, you name that bench yeah. there. Hasselbank, Van Hooijdonk and McKay. I mean, three of the top strikers in the world. But they weren't as good as Patrick Kluivert or Ruud van Nistelrooy, you know. Yeah. I mean, you're talking, they were a top, top, top side. And I mean, they were favourites. They expected to roll in and beat us. It was going to be a really difficult task. We were in Lansdowne Road. It was absolutely rocking. I mean, I know people lament for many times in the Aviva. I suppose you have to have people of a certain age now. It's 24 years ago. But a lot of people would say in the Aviva, the atmosphere was never the same as the Dutch game in 01. It's a game a lot of people point to. And obviously those of us longer in the tooth can go back to games like Spain 89 and France before that. But it was an electric atmosphere. It was a massive game, massive stakes. But we were up against one of the top teams in the world.
So I suppose the ultimate question is then, how do we play in this game? You argued that, you know, Roy Keane was the man against the Portuguese. So is this more of a huge team effort that delivers a massive famous win?
Yeah, it is a huge team effort, but still, I mean, well, first, I mean, Roy Keane clatters Mark Overmars after about 30 seconds. And thankfully, one of those days, a very experienced German referee, Helmut Krug, but thankfully, I say it all the time, the laws of the game don't change from the first minute to the 90th. But a lot of referees are reluctant to produce a yellow card in the game, first minute, even the first 20 minutes. So it does set a bit of a tone. Roy Keane had a brilliant game, don't get me wrong, but other players stepped up as well. Even having said that, and we played well, we still had to ride our luck. We had Mark Overmars and Boudouin Zenden, the two wingers, were tearing us apart. We were riding our luck, and I mean, somehow the likes of Ruud van Nistelrooy and Patrick Kluivert were missing really good chances. So it was a huge relief to get to halftime scoreless. And you're thinking, well, we hung on for points against Portugal twice. 45 minutes, if we can just keep it as nil-nil, we can get a playoff. And as I keep saying, we couldn't face a team as good as the Dutch in the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's an extraordinary kind of match, because my recollection of it was that the crowd was just absolutely rocking. It was absolutely electric, but it was one of those performances where it wasn't that we played fantastically well in terms of, you know, going out and attacking and doing all kind of stuff, but it was backs against the walls, and it was a typical kind of Irish performance where you knuckled down, you had a job to do, and you went and did it, and that's where the result came from.
Yeah, sorry, don't get me wrong. I don't think we went out and matched the Dutch and went toe-to-toe and played them up. But we did. I think we did play well. And as you said, it was backs to the wall. It was the strikers covering back. It was Roy Keane covering everywhere in midfield. It was our wingers supporting the fullbacks. But we also, we had to ride our luck. And the two wingers were, I was terrified of them. Overmars and Zenden looked, Look, they were top quality players. Yeah. Look, to play in Arsenal, Chelsea, and whoever else they played with. Top players. But they scared the hell out of us that day. Mm. And the two of them in particular, I thought just were superb. And we were delighted to get to half time. I mean, everybody was hoarse, screaming our heads off. But it was also a very nervy crowd.
Yeah. And I suppose we hold our own then for, I suppose, the rest of the match. But nearly 20 minutes to go, 22 minutes to go, a moment of magic and a moment of what you can argue is inexplicable Dutch defending is on the back post as well. But I suppose you were there. Walk us through that extraordinary moment when he scored.
I think we have to walk back about 10, 15 minutes earlier because Gary Kelly got a second yellow card. And
that's right.
We had been playing backs to the wall, hanging on with 11 men. And when Gary Kelly got the second yellow, it was a bit of a, look, I can't blame the referee, it was the right decision. But then with over half an hour to play, I think most people were thinking the Dutch are just going to go on and win this now. They were tearing us apart. But they were also feeling the pressure. And then, as you say, well, another decision that happened then was Mick McCarthy had to take off. He needed a right back. So he brought on Steve Finnan and took off Robbie Keane. Mm. It was actually Steve Finnan that went down, even though we had only 10 men and we were hanging on for the scoreless draw we needed. Steve Finnan went down the right and played a crossover, and Jason McAteer, God only knows what he was doing on the left-hand side. But
I'm sure they were saying that about Steve Finnan too. What the hell are you doing all the way up there?
So, yeah, and great cross. Jason took it down and smashed it into the net. Some bad Dutch defending, but a brilliant goal and a brilliant finish. Even still at 1-0. And look, at that stage, we would have bitten your hand off for the 1-1 draw because we felt, look, we'll beat Cyprus. We just need a draw. We get the playoff. Even still, and the way they'd got the two goals so late in Amsterdam, we were still feeling that we were going to be hanging on. I think another momentous decision was Louis van Gaal. He brought on, if I remember rightly, it was Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink and Pierre van Hooijdonk. Yeah. He brought on two of his strikers. He took off his two wingers. Mm. And to me, the two wingers were tearing us to bits. And even though he'd four of the best strikers in the world at the time, and I don't think that wouldn't be an exaggeration, he had four top quality strikers, but football's a team game and you can't really play four strikers and expect to get the goals. And
yeah, that's interesting because
that's the way it turned out.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you look at it, so he takes off what you're arguing is their best attacking threat with Zenden and Mark Overmars as well. And so on the pitch at the same time, you've got Van Nistelrooy, Kluivert, Hasselbaink, Van Hooijdonk, and of course you've got I think he brought on Van Bronckhorst as well, which would give you another bit of attacking wing back kind of play as well. So he kind of, it's interesting that you put it out because he's got lots of strikers on, but perhaps nobody to deliver them the balls that they need.
Yeah, and I mean, even some of the strikers, I think Van Hooijdonk got pushed a bit wide they're not wingers. And, okay, fantastic finishers, and maybe the feeling was one or two of them will grab us the goal or the two goals they needed at that point. But I felt they were less of a threat and much less of a threat without Overmars and Zenden than they were at the end, even with four top-quality strikers on the pitch. Mm. And
I remember they got an absolutely gilt-edged chance, and I think I can't remember who it fell to, but I think it was Patrick Kluivert maybe, and it was literally an inch or two past the left-hand the left-hand post or the right-hand post. And for, do you know that split second when you think a ball is in and then you hit, you see it hit the advertising boards behind the goal. Yeah. And it's almost as good as a goal. You're just sitting there going, thank God for that as well. So, and it was it was real backs to the wall stuff for the last 10, 15 minutes.
It was absolute backs to the wall. And don't get me wrong. I mean, with a little bit more luck and a little bit better finishing, the Dutch may well have got the first goal. And if they'd got the first goal, who knows, they could have got the second as well.
And look, in many ways,
if the guys that came off the bench scored the goals, he'd be saying it was a genius move. They had so many chances. They probably at least deserved a draw, if not a win, out of the game, because they really controlled the game. But we rode our luck. We defended superbly. And a lot of players played out of their skin, and we hung on for an incredible win and one of the great, great days in Lansdowne Road.
Absolutely, yeah. Fantastic win, famous win, 10 men, backs to the wall, everything that it had. And it certainly goes down into the pantheon of great, great Irish wins as well. But we still have a game to play. That's Cyprus at home as well. And I suppose if it's backs to the wall against the Dutch, this is pretty much a done and dusted affair after, what, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, I probably should go back a little bit, actually, because it was the day before or the morning of the Dutch game, the playoff draw was made. And we discovered that we were playing an Asian team, which was fantastic news. Well, ourselves or the Dutch, realistic, were playing an Asian team, which did make the prize of the draw or the win as we got it even bigger, because okay, we weren't going to face a team as good as the Dutch, but we could still have had potentially a tough playoff. But instead we had the Asian team, likely to be Saudi Arabia. And then once we beat the Dutch, temporarily we were 6 points clear at the top of the table. And if you looked at the group table on that Saturday afternoon, you're thinking, God, we can actually win the group if we beat Cyprus. Portugal would need to take 9 points. Now, the reality was they put 7 past Andorra later that day. But there was a game 4 days later. We didn't play in the group, but Portugal were away to Cyprus. And the game was live on RTE television, because there was hope there that, let's say, if Portugal drop points, we just need to beat Cyprus to go to the World Cup. If Portugal were to win the game, obviously the goal difference at this point was gone. They were off over the horizon. And Cyprus actually took the lead, and they led at half time, and automatic qualification was very, very real at that stage. But Portugal came out in the second half, equalized quickly, were 2-1, 3-1. Comfortable enough winners in the end. So
I strongly suspect perhaps the Portuguese manager got a bit of a hairdryer treatment going for those Portugal players after going down 1-0, and then, you know, they come out in the second half and they're drawn 1-1 after just 48 minutes. So I think they probably got a few choice words said to them.
I think absolutely, definitely, yeah. And but it was for brief, let's say 45 minutes or an hour.
There was hope.
There was hope. So by the time the Cyprus game came around, Portugal were at home to Estonia that night. We needed so many goals. I can't remember what we needed. It was a lot. So realistically, we were never going to top the group. I think they finished seven ahead at that stage. So we were never going to beat Cyprus by more than they were going to beat Estonia. They were always going to beat Estonia. They beat Estonia 5-0, never in doubt. We beat Cyprus 4-0. It was a comfortable win. It didn't actually matter in that we had already the playoff secured. So even if we lost, also moment to stay, because Niall Quinn broke the goal scoring record. He became our all-time leading goal scorer in that game. And, 22 goals for Ireland is an incredible. He's still our second highest goal scorer of all time on 22, which is an incredible achievement. Oh, it puts Robbie's 68 in perspective as well. But an incredible achievement. And Niall was one of our all-time greats. And it was great for him to break the record that day. We were two up very early in the game. It was a facile 4-0 win.
And it made Roy Keane our top goal scorer as well with 4 goals in the tournament too. So then we are on to a playoff. The draw happens. Who do we get and are we... How happy are we with it?
So, well, we had the draw, let's say, before the Dutch game. I can't remember if it was the day before or the morning of the Dutch game, but it was fantastic news. It was celebrations, and it made the prize.
Am I right in saying that they hadn't finished their qualifications either, so we didn't know. We knew roughly it was going to be an Asian team, but we didn't know who it was.
No, it was going to be an Asian runner-up.
Okay.
So... in one group, but the Asian groups had already gone on, and it was likely to be Saudi Arabia because Iran were top of the group. I think they'd already met the Saudis twice, or they were in control of the group. And the other runner-up was likely, I think, to be the UAE, but Saudi would have been expected to beat them comfortably enough. And it was looking like Saudi Arabia. And at that stage in September 2001, it wasn't possible to visit Saudi Arabia unless you were a Muslim doing the Hajj or you were going there on business. And I often look back because I probably would have been the only traveling fan.
Because as ever.
As ever. Well, the only way was to get there on business, and I immediately looked at the group, said there's no way Iran are going to drop points. They had only the minnows to play. I was working for a large American multinational at the time, and we had offices in Saudi. And the company policy, I did check with my boss, and he knew exactly what I was doing. And I said, look, I'll be on annual leave, obviously, but will the company facilitate me by giving me a letter? And he said, actually, it's fine. It's company policy. If you're looking for a visa, we'll help, we'll facilitate anything like that. So I was able to get a letter for a business visa, but I also needed somebody in the Saudi office to invite me. And I didn't know anybody in the Saudi office. So I fired off an email we actually had a few offices in Jeddah and Riyadh. And I fired off an email to a few people, and I have volunteered. I said, look, I'll come for a day, give a talk on what I'm working on, which was quite cutting edge at the time and would have been of interest, all at my own expense, even flying to Jeddah. Even if the match was in Riyadh, I'd fly to Jeddah or vice versa. And I just need a letter of invitation, no cost. So a guy very kindly replied and said, happy to help. And there's no need to fly specially, but call in if the game is there. And so had everything, passport, everything sent to the Saudi embassy in London, and Iran go and lose to Bahrain in a total shock result. So total panic. That put Saudi in the World Cup. Iran suddenly had to play UAE in the playoff, and my passport was in London. And in a big panic, I called the Saudi embassy. Please, please, I need my passport back. Trip is cancelled. Because these things were taking weeks at this stage. Yeah. And they said, well, about the fee. I said, I don't care about the fee. Just send me back my passport, please. So in fairness, they sent it straight back. And I think they refunded the fee as well, but my business trip was cancelled. They never gave them the real reason.
Did you have an awkward conversation, having to send an email going, sorry, won't be coming after all?
Oh, I did. Well, I sent the email, but I hope we meet in Japan, Iran. Which actually, as it turned out, we did. The Saudi guy was very nice about it. And I said, congrats and qualifying for the World Cup. Needless to say, I won't be coming. And he was dead nice about it. He was very helpful, actually. And but then the pressure was on, of course, to get an Iranian visa, because that wasn't straightforward. But they actually had an embassy in Dublin, which was a lot more helpful. And they, at the time, I mean, obviously it's easy to visit Saudi now, but at the time it wasn't. And of course, you could visit Iran as a tourist easily in those days.
Yeah, so you had to run around like a headless chicken trying to get visas then for getting to Iran, who ended up being our host. But we had to take them on in Dublin first. It's kind of a strange get from certainly from what I can remember anyway. There was a lot of expectation that we would beat them, But it from what I can remember anyway, it seemed a very a tentative affair, a nervous affair. Am I right in that? Or am I remembering it wrong?
Yeah, no, the expectation was that we'd beat them, but it didn't really turn out like that. I mean, well, we did beat them 2-0, and I suppose you can say it was comfortable enough in the end. We made hard work of it. And they had chances. Shea Given had a really, really good game that night, and I think they had about 3 1-on-1s with him in the end, and he came out on top. Even at 2-0, they had chances to nick an away goal, which could have been crucial. But we got the goals just before half time and just after half time. So 2-0 was a big win, but we rode our luck a little bit in that game.
And I suppose a 2-0 as well, it kind of leaves the door open a little bit for Iran. It's not beyond them to get, you know, two goals as well in Tehran. So I suppose going to Tehran then, which is obviously an incredibly, well, you tell me, difficult place to go, you know, in terms of an away team.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's just so many things about it, I suppose. I mean, it was 2-0. Roy Keane pulled out of the return. Now, there's a dispute whether that was prearranged or not. But so he was going to be missing. You kind of think in those days, 2-0 with the away goals rule, if we nick a goal at all, it's all over. But then you're going to the Azadi in Tehran. It holds 120,000 people. The atmosphere is just going to be incredible. And there was only going to be a pocket of Irish fans there. It was going to be a nervy night. And particularly when you got there, they were so confident they were going to win 3-0. I mean, there was 3-0 everywhere.
Wow.
It was, people were saying 3-0. There was 3-0 in newspapers. And as the game approached, you're kind of thinking, God, they really believe it. I mean, and I mean, it is home advantage. It's the noise, the passion of the crowd. Another one that was hotly debated and was a big story in the newspapers was, I think it was 4 Irish women travelled, and women were banned from football, from watching football in Iran at the time. And the dispute was whether they're going to get in or not. And none of them would actually talk to the newspapers, because they were trying. I was actually there at one point, and I didn't really know any of them that well, but one of them was quite a regular traveler, and one of the papers was trying to get her to say, she said, we don't know whether we're going to get in. No comment. We're not saying anything, you know. And they did get in the end. The way the Iranians got around it was something like, Irish men know how to behave at football in the company of women, but Iranian men, it was for the protection of Iranian women or something, that Iranian men wouldn't behave properly or whatever. Now, there were stories actually of women dressed as a man getting in or had going to games, I saw years later or whatever. But it was probably one of the best atmospheres I've ever experienced at football as well. It was really, really noisy, really raucous. The prayer before the game was incredible. It was absolutely unbelievable, and the atmosphere was something else. I do have a big regret from that what I believe would have been absolutely class, because the Irish fans were stationed, we were put very high up in the stadium. That's, we were right, actually fairly central, very central, but we were right in the top tier, and the stadium announcer was up steps, or kind of a ladder, if I remember rightly, up behind us. And with my collecting and everything, I decided to climb up and chance my arm and see if I could get looking for a team sheet. And he was delighted to see me. And he says, oh, great, great. He spoke English. He said, and he wanted me to give him the pronunciations. So I was helping him with the pronunciations. And I said, will I read out the team instead? And he says, okay, you read the Irish team. So at this stage, I was going to be reading the Irish team out to 100,000 people in the ground. And my plan was to say, Ivara Hain, Shea Given, or something like that. But unfortunately, his boss came up at some point And the boss was saying, what's he doing here? And he said, he's helping me.
Who's this random Irish guy in our media box?
Yeah, and there was no way they were having this random Irish guy. And I got kicked out and told to go back. And his boss wasn't risking me. Well, I suppose they didn't know. In fairness, they didn't know what I was going to say or anything like that. True, yeah. But so I was told to go back down to the Irish fans, and I didn't get to read the team out, but I did help.
You were this
close. I was that close, but that could have been my moment of fame. But I did help him with the pronunciations. So
brilliant! What a story. But how does this kind of this big atmosphere, there's 100,000 people, massive amount of people at this game. They expect victory. They expect to be this 3-0. How does the game go? Because we kind of hold, it's kind of to and fro for a large period of the game.
Yeah, I mean, we think we had one big chance. I don't think they had too many chances. It wasn't a great game.
Yeah, it wasn't. I remember that.
And I think as the game wore on, I mean, into the 60, 70, 80th minute, it looked like it was going to pan out 0-0. And their fans had turned a little bit. I believe there were riots outside. We were held back, I think, for our own safety and everything. But I mean, the police and everything were fantastic to us. But the fans were definitely turning on the team. And even though they scored in the 91st minute or 92nd minute, we only kicked off and the final whistle blew. So it wasn't really that nervous. We were, I think, comfortable enough. We defended well. We maybe had only a couple of half chances, but we weren't that threatened either. And the raucous, noisy support they had kind of dissipated through the game, I suppose. We quietened the crowd as well. Mm. And, on the final whistle, we were in the World Cup, which was incredible. And I'll tell another story, because I was with my friend Jim from Cork, and there's about 300 Irish fans there, but only four of us went independently. We kind of booked our own flights, Lufthansa via Frankfurt, and I ended up meeting a friend of Jim's on that trip, and he ended up meeting a friend of mine, and they paired up. They actually ended up sharing together, because there was only four of us, and Jim and I had already booked accommodation. The other two lads were actually going without accommodation booked. Wow. Which was, I think that's what it was, or else one of them had booked it and they shared. I can't remember, but certainly at least one, if not two of them, were going. Sorry, maybe one of them, I can't remember whether it was Damien or Pat, had accommodation booked. The other hadn't. But they ended up sharing accommodation as well. At the final whistle, there was 300 Irish fans celebrating. Well, sorry, there was 299 Irish fans celebrating and going nuts. And I looked around and Jim was nowhere to be seen. And he comes back a couple of minutes later, because there was a big banner at the edge of the Irish section, which had something like Irish, all in Farsi, and Irish supporters section, Irish fans, colourful banner and everything like that. And instead of celebrating going to the World Cup, quick as a flash, Jim had been over, taken the banner off the fence, and it's still on display in Cork. It has been shown a few times in exhibitions and stuff, because he still has it.
Brilliant. I suppose that's the kind of person, that's the kind of go-to attitude that you need sometimes, perhaps, Gary, to get your memorabilia. You should have told your man, I'm staying in this box and I'm going to read out all those names.
Well, I got my team sheet, so I was happy, but I think Jim got the best prize of the whole
Absolutely,
night.
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
It was a brilliant souvenir to have, and he could have spent a few months in an Iranian prison if they decided.
If caught, yeah.
They
wouldn't be messing
around. I don't
around.
Know if
So what was it like? Coming out from the game then? They were obviously really upset if there was riots happening outside with their own team, etc. But what was it like for Irish fans coming out of there? And also, I suppose the other side of it too is celebrating in a celebratory mood too.
Yeah, so it was a bit so. What actually had happened was as well. So there was four of us there independently. There was Ray Tracy Travel, who were there for a couple of days in a fancy hotel, and there was 747 Travel, which was a day trip. So they only had a couple of hours. So they'd been bussed in from the airport, and they were being bussed back. And I think the thinking was it wouldn't have been fair to have Irish fans in Iran for 2 or 3 days when you couldn't get a drink. So,
they would have found it.
Now, I will say that the people on the Ray Tracy trip may have probably safe enough at 24 years on to say any of them that wanted to were able to get a drink, which was probably a big risk. But certainly we witnessed a lot of them coming back to the hotel with quite a lot of drink on board. But
we should point out as well, it was quite a strict regime that was there in Iran as well. They took that stuff very, very seriously.
They did. Now, I mean, look, Persian hospitality is legendary. And I mean, I know Persian people outside of, I'm not in any way supportive of the regime, the Islamic regime. But the Persian people are lovely people. And we were treated incredibly well. And they actually loved having foreign visitors. So going around Tehran, we also went to Esfahan for a day. It was absolutely fantastic, and we met many wonderful people. But the government was seen as being quite extreme, as being, even in those days, as being very strict as well. And you would want to have been careful and watching. And I mean, we didn't touch any alcohol. Actually, we were renting an apartment from a friend of a friend. They actually left alcohol out for us, but we didn't. Well, Jim doesn't drink anyway, but we didn't touch it because we knew how difficult it was to get, and they might never be able to replace it. So it was still there when we left. But it was a very strictly dry country. There was no alcohol available. I think it's still that way officially. And obviously somebody for the guys in the Ray Tracy trip had some underground place. They were able to bring the fans off in a load of taxis. And I think there was, they turn a blind eye to a lot of stuff there. But the risk is that someone decides, oh, we don't want these people drinking in our country. And they could have arrested fans. I mean, it was... I think it was pretty risky to be walking around drunk in Tehran.
But nonetheless, we are going to a World Cup now in Korea, Japan. Does this? I obviously it does, but does it essentially saves Mick McCarthy's job? This being under massive pressure at the start of this campaign, I won't say smiles and handshakes, but certainly he's saved the job.
Oh, he's definitely saved his job. And the feeling was he's been vindicated. He's proved he's been not just a great player for Ireland, but now a great manager. He's brought us to a World Cup, a third World Cup in 4 attempts, including the two, obviously, that Jack brought us to. But definitely, it was an incredible achievement to split the Dutch and Portuguese and then to win the playoffs. So Mick is, at this stage, very highly regarded and expected to be around for many years to come. And it was certainly all sweetness and light having qualified for the World Cup. And it was a great campaign. Incredibly, incredibly well. One of the probably the one of the toughest groups we've ever got, and certainly I think probably the most impressive qualification.
Yeah,
we've even off the top of my head, one of the most impressive. Okay, maybe go back to Euro 88 to qualify top of that group. But I mean, okay, I suppose we knocked out the European champions in 90 to qualify for 94 as well. But certainly it was a hugely impressive campaign. Well, I mean, and Mick deserved a lot of credit for qualifying.
Yeah. And I think as well, when you look at the final, the group part of it as well, you know, we're level on points with Portugal with 24 each. We're 4 points clear of the Netherlands in third. We've drawn away, home and away with Portugal. We've drawn away with the Netherlands and beat them. So it's a really, really impressive campaign from us to get the playoffs and to get to the World Cup.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the injury time winner in Tehran, we would have qualified unbeaten as well.
That's true. 7 wins, 3 draws.
Yeah, and actually, as it turned out, it was the only defeat we suffered in the whole of the 2002 World Cup, because we came home from, it's obviously for another day, but we came home unbeaten.
Yeah, technically unbeaten.
If you lose on penalties, it is officially goes down as a draw. I think it's fair enough to say you come home from a World Cup unbeaten if you're knocked out in penalties and you haven't lost a game in the group.
But that doesn't mend my broken heart, Gary. It doesn't mend it. Oh. But that's a podcast for another day. Gary, as always, we know there was fireworks to come on and off the field as well in the coming years as well in the run-up twos. But I think that is almost certainly a podcast for another day on its own, perhaps too. But Gary, as ever, a trip down another piece of wonderful Irish footballing history as well. So thanks for that.
Thanks, Gil.
Well, that's it for this week's podcast. Don't forget to share the show on your own social media channels to let more people find out about the history and heritage of Irish football. And why not share your own stories about it as well? Turn on your notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so that you get notified straight away when a new episode drops. And remember, support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League teams. It's our heritage. It's our game. Bye for now.